Are you living the crazy life of a sports parent? This is Sports Parenthood, the podcast packed with cool conversations with sports people, coaches, and professionals for rookie sports parents just like you. You'll hear nuggets of gold in every episode with your hosts, fellow sports parents, John and Tiffany Bonacera.
Hello and welcome to another year of Sports Parenthood. It's great to be back in your ears after a break. We know there's been radio silence from us. It wasn't our intention to go completely silent, but hey, things haven't really gone to plan in general these last few months, have they?
No, definitely not, Tiff. They haven't. Wow. Yeah, look, it's a ride, isn't it, that we're all on?
Strange it's, ride.
Yeah, look, it is, and I liken it to a roller coaster because it is.
The uncertainty.
You never know what today or tomorrow is going to hold. But yeah, it has been a crazy start. We've got a bit of time together as a family over Christmas, but back at work now, and that's a bit crazy itself. Mm-hmm. We've got a fairly stringent testing protocol at work. So everyone on arrival every day is a rapid test before they're allowed into the facility, and mm-hmm. I'm fairly central to that process. So it's added weight to your day, and you know, throwing on the PPE and handing someone a swab and taking a sample and doing the dippy, and then going back to an area where we're set up and we put all the tests through a machine, and that's what comes out.
How has everyone embraced that new process?
Obviously, we understand that it's critical to the survival of the game and to the industry that we're mostly negative. We have had some positives, as has everybody in their family and their works. But we're going okay so far. I'm not sure that it's sustainable long term, and I say that with a massive respect for our frontline healthcare workers who do it
day in, day out.
Religiously, because I'm 3 weeks in and it's a tough.
And you've lost your hair over it.
Yep, both of them have gone.
But lucky you've got good eyebrows.
Indeed.
This is going to be another year of payout on John, I think.
I could save some of these eyebrow hairs. I could grow a full head of hair pretty soon. There's no question. But what have we got this plan this year on the podcast, Tiff?
Well, we've got plenty planned for the podcast in terms of guests and topics we'll be covering. We've even got...
Yes, some merch.
Man. Check out the Sports Parenthood Facebook and Instagram pages for a photo of us in our new caps and let us know if this is something you'd be keen to wear.
And some budgies. We've got some budgie smugglers coming. We've got our design. We're talking to them and we might even get some maybe one piece or bikinis.
And a matchy-matchy family.
Yeah.
Ensemble.
Well, we'll get three. You're not going to get the fourth.
Is going to get a big
She'll just give us a big brown eye. No way. Not a chance will she be keen. So, who are we speaking with today?
Well, you'll hear from Erin Plummer, and what an interesting story she has to tell. Erin won her first state gold medal in swimming at the age of 8. In an honest account, she explains how she ended up being what she describes as an early burnout child.
Later, Erin transitioned into synchronised swimming, now known as artistic swimming, where she went on to represent Australia at 3 world championships. And there's much more to this sport than many of us think. And what a great account Erin gives.
Definitely. Now, Erin is a sports parent to 3 daughters, and they each need something a little different from her. She talks openly about her eldest daughter's bumpy start in sport and her own role in that story, plus how her 2 youngest daughters are absolutely loving swimming at a club where she began her own swimming career and continues to call her happy place.
I've seen Erin this week actually out at SOPAC at the Senior State Age Championships where one of her daughters is competing and doing a great job, and Erin's out there volunteering as always with some timekeeping and technical help.
And just a great vibe.
Yeah, she's a really good lady. And I think probably the most pertinent thing about this interview is we've just had a week where Swimming Australia has issued an unreserved apology to women and girls in the sport after a scathing independent investigation. This interview focuses on the many positive and enduring ways our kids can benefit from being involved in the right club, in the right environment.
Here's Erin. Enjoy our chat with her.
Nice way to start. Well, my mum was actually a swimming teacher, so I certainly grew up around pools and spent a lot of time in the water. I do have one older brother and he was asthmatic, so he started in squads and I wanted to be in the water rather than plonked on the side just watching him. So that's pretty much how I began in the squads, and I started swimming up at Warringah Aquatic Centre, which is where my daughters still train to this day, where I've been four times this morning, ferrying them back and forth.
Classic sports parenting.
Absolutely. And I have a life membership up there, so it's certainly my happy place. And in fact, many of the lifeguards that were there 30 years ago are still there to this day. So
wow. That's testament to a good environment.
Isn't it? It's so lovely. So that was my beginnings at the early age of five. But I went a little too hard, a little too soon. So I was the early burnout child, unfortunately.
You touched on that straight away, and obviously it took you there. Can you just tell us a little bit more about the experience of being a successful young athlete and how that manifested itself
into that burnout
so early?
Yeah, sure. It really wasn't something at the time that we were doing one session, which led to two, and you start increasing it with the expectation that you want to get better and faster. And as you progress through the squad levels, you're actually required to go more times a week. So
yes,
it was my coach's request at the time, and testament to Australian swimming. Back then there were no guidelines in place, but I think you'd have to check my facts on this. I believe it was about 2 years ago that actually implemented rules and regulations. So in the desire to stop early burnout in kids, you now have to be 13.
A certain age to do a certain number of sessions.
Which definitely wasn't in place when I was young. And as well as being a sport parent, I also do a lot of officiating now for SMNE. And last week I was the starter out at the meet and then did some announcing. And I was reading through the program. So even at age eight, they are highly discouraging them from competing. There's actually no championships, no medals awarded until they're nine, and in some cases 10.
Okay.
So they're really trying to push that age back, which I think is a fantastic thing because no one ever won an Olympic medal at age 11.
No, they didn't. You touched on it there again, and you did speak about it being sort of too much too soon.
Mm.
How did you find out? How did you reference it? How did your mom and or dad pick that up?
How did you feel?
And what made you say, oh, hang on,
I've hit the wall?
I've hit the wall too early.
Out here.
Yeah, I truly loved swimming. Look, I loved the camaraderie. I loved all the privileges, holidays for us were wherever the next swimming carnival or surf carnival was at the time, mingling with other friends and whatnot. But the way that it was identified, it was actually another family pointed out to my parents. I was incredibly small. Mm-hmm. I do come from a petite family genetically, but when I hit high school, so I was 11, I was very tiny, significantly smaller than the other kids, and they suggested I might need growth hormone, which was a bit of an eye-opener. So we went to my GP who sent me to the children's hospital, and I can remember doing all sorts of testing, riding a bike with an oxygen mask and height, weight, blood tests, all the usual things. And eventually they did an x-ray and it showed up I had osteopenia, so the early stages of osteoporosis, which was put back to the fact that I put all of my eggs in one basket. I didn't do netball. I did do dancing, but I then made the choice just to focus wholly and solely on my swimming and did no weight-bearing exercise. And so that's where the wheels started to fall off for me, just overtraining, I think undernourished. And there was probably a predisposition to osteoporosis having, you know, other cases in our family. But, yeah, so that for me was really where the brakes were pulled and I came to a grinding halt actually by the doctor's recommendation.
Must have been so tough at such a young age.
Sport altogether.
For you to experience that.
Yeah, it was incredibly hard. Yeah, do you know, because I look back and to me winning was everything. If I lost a race, I was just...
Inconsolable
for a week, but looking back, it's the kids that sort of don't win and sort of have small failures that sort of reset the goalposts, and you learn from those mistakes, which you don't see at the time. And they're usually the ones that go on to great success. So, yeah, that was my story in a nutshell.
How did your parents kind of navigate that scenario with you?
My parents were amazing. they were eager. I think like all parents, you want the very best for your kids. So they didn't question the coaches who were encouraging me to do more and more sessions, but nor do I blame the coaches. It's just trial and error over time. The fact that my parents took me to all these appointments and doctors, and then when I was told I had to stop, they did everything possible to make sure that I recovered. So lots of bone density scans, et cetera, and the nutrition side, had to, you know, up the calories. And as an athlete, you do obviously eat a whole lot more than the average growing teenager. My parents to this day are my biggest fans. They were super supportive.
Oh, well, that's amazing. Now, it sounds like you had a little bit of downtime there and focused on kind of managing your health. But then we'd love to hear about, your transition into synchronized swimming, where you went on to represent Australia at 3 world championships and winning 11 national titles. We'd love to hear more about that.
Yeah, sure. So when I came back, I was super keen just to dive straight back in with the gold squad and go and do the main sets. And my coach was, at the time, Graham Carroll. He was very apprehensive, to say the least. So the deal that he struck with me was I could come back to training, but I could only do the first hour. And just by sheer coincidence, the duet, the Australian synchronized swimming duet, was training in the diving pool. So he said, after you've done an hour here, go over and swim with the girls. Just go and watch the girls. And so I did that. I found it fascinating that the sheer athleticism of the sport like blew me away, because I just used to look at it as a sport of artistry. So I was captivated by it and I really enjoyed it from the get-go. But at that point, my ambition was still to go back to swimming. But I am vertically challenged. So for me, I did bend.
Aren't we all?
I dabbled in long distance swimming. We had Shelley Taylor Smith also in our squad at the time. And to this day, she is my dearest friend and she taught me so much and took me under her wing. But oh Lord, she is next level incredible. So I left the long distance swimming to Shelley and I did fall in love with synchronized swimming, which is actually now called artistic swimming.
Artistic swimming. Yes. I did read that the other day.
It was rebranded after the Rio Olympics. But yes, so that was how I began in the sport. And then one thing led to the other. So from, state championships to nationals and then on to world champs, which was really exciting. I met so many amazing things and people. I guess the interesting thing with synchro is it's quite a small sport. So there were many, many opportunities on the side. If you sit back and scrutinize my claim to fame, there was a Subaru ad that I did and they're always looking for synchronized swimmers to sort of fill in those parts in the commercials. So I did a razzmatazz ad and like I worked as a mermaid at Luna Park. There's so many quirky different things that the sport
is. Actually interested.
Yeah, while we're on the subject.
Well, we call it synchro or artistic swimming.
Yeah, we don't really know a lot about it and we'd love to know sort of what's involved and
it looks hard.
How does the training manifest? Like what would a training session look like in the pool?
Well, I used to train for up to 10 hours a day. So there's it's really intense, the training. And I can remember at one point we were living at the Institute in South Australia, which is where the cyclists and the cricket players were as well. And I can remember stinking of chlorine. My hair was bright green and we're the sport that everybody laughs at and ridicules. And then there were the cricketers kicking back. All kudos to them, amazing. But I used to just think, I train so hard and people just laugh at the sport. But honestly, it's one of the most physically grueling sports.
Yes.
They actually did a test on all the Olympic sports prior to the London 2012 Games. And they found artistic swimming ranked second to long distance runners in aerobic capacity.
I don't doubt it.
Yeah,
you're underwater for significant periods of time and you're trying to perform at the same time. So there must be.
Yeah, a lot of that is mental too. So part of the selection process for the national team in Australia, we did an underwater swim.
No doubt.
And I used to try and meditate underwater because there's two ways you can do this. You can either take the most enormous breath possible and go quite hard and just get as far as you can. But I used to go quite slowly and imagine that I was on the bottom of the ocean with tropical fish. And so I was prepping in my mind to get as far as I possibly could. And the girl before me passed out underwater and they had to scoop her out of the pool.
Oh, she's had a crack.
You push yourself to, exactly.
Yeah.
So there's a lot, there's a dance aspect to it as well. I did do ballet as a youngster and I've got the dodgy feet to prove it. But if you can imagine sprinting all out underwater, chlorine in your eyes, holding your breath and trying to be in time with seven other people, it pretty much encapsulates
and look
the
good
sport.
At the same time.
And look good at the same time. I actually do see now a lot of, not to do with looking good, but I notice watching my daughters train, they use a lot of sculling techniques to get distance per stroke in swimming. They use very similar techniques that we use back in the day because there's all sorts of ways to make sure that you propel yourself with as much velocity out of the water as humanly possible.
You've just described that so beautifully.
Yeah,
it really,
really good.
Has given some insight to something that I've always admired, but I haven't known a lot about.
Yeah, a lot of what you admire is what you see above the water, but where all of the biomechanics and the magic happens is underwater.
Yep.
So there's a little viewing window. I keep talking about the Warringah Aquatic Centre because it's my happy place, but just near Lane 1 in the deep end, there's a little viewing window, which is where
from under the pool.
So my coach used to go under there to watch my technique on sculling, and there's a little sign that says, "Hi, Erin." And the other day my daughters were playing and one of the legendary lifeguards had written, "Hi, Jazzy, hi, Abby." Like, "Mom,
that's cool."
Look at this. Yeah, so lots of hard work, undoubtedly, and very, very green hair. That was always a problem.
Ducks on the pond, maybe.
Yes.
Where on top, everyone's like, "Oh, look at that." And underneath, the legs are going frantically.
Yeah. Yes, yeah.
Erin, you were also an all-round athlete. So you represented Australia not only in synchronised or artistic swimming, but in surf lifesaving, and New South Wales in water polo and cricket, cross-country running.
Yeah, my other big sport was mostly surf lifesaving. The cricket, I have to think, that was actually, we were school state knockout champions, and that was largely due to the fact that I had some legendary sporting athletes amongst my midst at McKellar.
Sporting
And the water polo too. I had Debbie Watson, Gemma Brown. That we had many, many Olympians at my high school, which was...
That's amazing.
Yes, to make the school relay team, I had to, and even in the same house as me, my maiden name was Erin Gard, so I had to race Elka Graham, Brooke Hansen, just to make my house relay team at the school carnival.
Gosh.
Incredible.
Ouch.
Yes.
That's a fairly good cohort there, Erin.
I think that probably speaks volumes. Like, we all sort of encouraged each other because you do miss out on a lot socially being an athlete.
You do.
But we were all in the same basket. So we spent our lives swimming. There was a big bus full of girls that would go up to that pool every afternoon from school. And we even had a breakfast club in the morning, which I'm really hoping to bring back because it was amazing. You'd pay $2 and you could eat as many pancakes as you wanted and cereal. And we'd all do our homework together and jump on the bus, which was great fun back in the day.
Yeah, that's a great setup.
It does.
That really is.
Yeah.
How do you think being a sports person in that type of environment has defined you and your life now?
Where do I even begin? I think, look, focusing most definitely, because I had so much fear of losing, as I touched on earlier. I would get so nervous before competitions. But rather than wasting my time and energy worrying about my competitors, eventually I learned to bring it back to my own game plan. So visualization and breathing became key, and I spent a lot of time doing my routine over and over in my mind like a movie. And goal setting was another really big lesson. I can remember I read a book back in the day. It's still one of my favorite books. It's called The Monk Who Sold His Ferrari, and it's a true story. And it was about a monk. He was an incredible archer, and he blindfolded himself, and he said to this young traveler, "Do you think I'm going to be able to hit the target on the tree blindfolded?" And he said, "Yeah, I guess so." But he fired the arrow and he missed by a mile, and he had to figure out the lesson, which was you can be the very best at something, but if you can't see where you want to go, then you'll never get there. And that resonated with me a lot, because you spend all this time training and sometimes you set a big goal, but you need those little stepping stones in order to get there, because, you know, the magic doesn't happen in a day.
Thank you for that. That's a really, visual analogy.
Yeah.
You can picture that. And I love that process. And I remember on a similar note, and not from that book, but I'm definitely going to read
that
book.
That's incredible. Lots of life lessons.
Is when you're going to, it is. But when you're going to drive somewhere and you don't know where you're going, you don't just get in the car and drive, do you?
Exactly right.
You look it up and you map out a route.
Yeah.
And you might map somewhere to stop and have something to eat or go to the toilet or whatever it might be, but you've got to have a route and a journey planned out. And that's a very, really, really cool analogy.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. So goals are super important. Yeah, one more I'd love to touch on too. I think I mentioned it a little earlier, but the golden lesson for me, and I'm still working on this one, which is sometimes why I don't put my togs on and join you two at swimming club.
We will get you
comfortable that you don't.
I used to, and I'll tell you why. A lot of my younger friends who now have kids who come along who I know will beat me, I do not want to be beaten. Hands down, full stop, is the reason I won't put my cozzies on, which is terrible because you guys are out there every week just enjoying it. And
you're so encouraging too of my terrible swimming.
And you know what's funny, Erin?
Swimming.
I'm one of the ones who's learned to be beaten.
I'm still learning. Rub your magic off on me. I'm so competitive, So I'm probably not the one to speak on this, but I can say I have this saying that I tend to tell the kids now because I do have three daughters and only two are now swimming. I think I scared the eldest one away, which I feel terrible about. But I used to be a little over-encouraging. You know, before she'd swim, I might say something like, the difference between ordinary and extraordinary is that little bit extra. Too full on. I think as a parent, you've got to be a parent. You've got to leave the coaching to the coaches. So now I say to her before a race, pressure is for tires. You know, just trying to take all of the pressure off. Yeah. And that's resulted in kids who, like even this morning, I'm trying to sort of get my pajamas off and get ready to go. And she's like, come on, Mom, come on. We're going to be late. And that's how it should be.
It's so true.
It should.
Yeah.
100% agree with you.
She didn't trust me that I wouldn't wake her up this morning. So she had to get her own alarm clock because she wasn't convinced that I'd wake her up.
Which I'm sure you were super organized. Now, interestingly, and you know, the swimming, I guess, does make headlines. It's a popular sport in Australia and obviously across the world. But just this week, four-time Olympian Emily Seebohm has spoken out about the difficulty of being seen in a swimming costume. Do you think this is a feeling other athletes share?
I think it's a feeling to some degree that we all share.
Yep.
I think it's more the issue of body development going through puberty and perhaps highlighted by being in a swimsuit. Mm. I think the bigger issue is the rise of social media resulting in that weapon of mass destruction that we seem to have to our self-esteem 24/7. It's so curated and filtered and airbrushed. First job was as a journalist, and I remember we had an entire floor of graphic designers that were there to airbrush
fixing up
images. But to come back to the original question, I think if teens weren't in swimming costumes at the pool and training, they'd likely be at the beach in far skimpier costumes that I'm privy to. They still have the same struggles, right?
Yeah.
So I love that my daughters have an activity in swimming that keeps them occupied and focused and fit. And I think those issues of being in a swimming cozzy are there, whether you're training at a competitive pool or with your friends. It's something that we have to keep an eye on and monitor for sure.
Yeah, agree. Now, speaking of your three daughters, we did speak offline a little bit about your eldest daughter and Alani and start in swimming has kind of played out. We'd love to you to delve a little bit more into your own children and what path they're taking, I guess, at the moment.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, look, I'll wear my heart on my sleeve here because my mother, as I mentioned, was a swimming coach. I swam. My brother's a lifeguard. My dad's heavily involved still to this day with swimming. So I felt that I put too much pressure on her and that ricocheted, and it wasn't her passion and her love. So she quit training as early as she possibly could, which I would never have told her, you know, sort of upsets you. But I let her go, and she was actually a dancer, spent many years doing ballet before and after school, and that was her love. During COVID, that became a little bit too much, and she's 15, where there's a high dropout rate across all endeavours and sports. And she's now come back to
competing. I love that story.
So she's heavily involved, with the surf club, and she did her first surf carnival a couple of weeks ago. So super proud of her, and this year she'll compete in Champion Lifesaver, which is... You know what I loved about watching her compete is that she did it with a smile from ear to ear. And she actually planned on coming stone cold last and surprised herself. Yeah, it's so much nicer to do it without any expectations and just the sheer love of it. I cannot get her out of the water now. So that story, which had a bit of a bumpy start, certainly has a happy ending. So she's really enjoying it.
That is a really positive story, isn't it?
And you've also got Jaslyn, who's 12, and Avalon is 7. Is that
all
right?
Girls.
Okay. Where are they at? Well, we've got a house full of girls.
Super swimmers.
So lucky we are. Yeah, so definitely. Lucky with all the girls.
Yeah.
100%.
Three really different paths with their swimming, all swimmers. But the little one, she has just begun squad training this week. So, yes, so this morning was actually her second session taking her up to the pool. So very, very early days. Who knows what will happen with Avalon, although she did ask me to take her up there early because she's a big fan of playing before and after. Loves jumping off the diving boards. And,
well, that's fun.
And that's, who knows what will happen with Abby.
That's all part of the fun.
She's a very, very keen swimmer, so she'll be competing this week at her first senior state. She's doing really well. Jazzy's blessed with my husband's side of genetics, and she's already head and shoulders above me in terms of her height. She's a school age national champion and, you know, holds lots of records, et cetera, et cetera. But she did beg me and plead not to talk about her. So,
No, we know that.
Well, we'll leave it to the facts.
Yes.
That's okay.
You
can't dispute the facts, but we don't have to talk any deeper.
Yeah, the swimming is her everything, you know, the friends that she's made. And I particularly love that she's in a family of girls. So by going to swimming, she mingles with boys as well, and she mingles with older kids and younger kids and multi-class athletes. And it just is such a lovely way for her to develop all those friendships and it takes a village to raise the kids. And we're pretty lucky with the group.
It's a big part of it.
Yeah, and the coaches become like another set of parents.
Yes.
They're amazing.
I'm going to go a bit left here, and just because I hear it in your voice and your, I don't know what the word I'm trying to look for. You obviously have a really strong connection with the swimming club that you're a part of.
Yes.
And it was part of your youth, and it's now part of your children's youth.
Mm-hmm.
How do you judge that it's working? How do you as a parent know that the culture in a particular group is good and that there are healthy things happening? Obviously yourself, you had lived experience, and you had a mum for a swimming coach, and you had a dad who was heavily involved.
But
what about the people that don't and are literally dropping their child off? Their child's gone into the pool, and during these COVID times, perhaps they're not even watching them swim. How do you judge that their children are in the right place?
Oh, I think it's the feedback from the kids themselves. You know, as I said this morning, my kids busking their gasket to get out of the door and get to swimming. And on the weekend when they've got some downtime, it's the swimming friends that they gravitate towards. It's the happiness levels that they have from being at the pool. And look, I love swimming. It's really my form of meditation. So I'm not often watching her train, but it's the feedback that I get from her. And she would train a whole lot more if I didn't have all my issues and I was such a fuddy-duddy about early athlete burnout.
Oh, yes.
She would be at that pool morning, noon and night. So I think that's what it comes down to. And they have so much fun up there. It's really, you know, they'll do relays where they dive in and play scissor, paper, rock. So they're not doing high lactate
Super
sessions
cool.
at the moment. I cannot complain. They're so blessed up there. And as I said, the lifeguards as well. You know, they had a get together, one of the lifeguards' birthdays, and there's this camaraderie that all the kids and everyone's invited to that as well. It's just such a happy place.
Do you think the culture of sport, like holistically or overarching, has changed since you were an athlete?
No, I mean, the culture was and is, in my opinion, just incredible. But what I do enjoy seeing is that many of the kids that are up there at the moment are the offspring of yes. people that I used to swim with. So
that's a wonderful affirmation. Yeah. It is.
of kids staying within the sport. I think I keep coming back to it, as I touched on earlier, that the regulations yep. in place to try and retain swimmers is probably the biggest difference. There's so many things that have been put in place to try and prevent those early dropout rates. But other than that, there's such depth in swimming in Australia. And I'm now talking about swimming rather than synchronized swimming, but I think with that amount of talent and interest and the volunteers, that the sport is in a really healthy place. When the numbers start to dwindle, that's when you know there might be a problem. But I think it's just going from strength to strength. The one thing that I will say that is alarming to me, and I'm slightly worried about, which is why I, in the past few years, have done all my officiating courses. I don't love being judge of strokes. I don't like disqualifying kids. I know somebody has to do it, but I've done my starter and marshal and announcing and all these jobs because there seems to be a lack in the volunteers. Yep. And I know that there's a lot of families where both partners are working, so there's not a lot of time. But that's, I think, one difference. There used to be too many officials that had to turn them away, whereas now they've actually started paying us to work at major meets because there's just not enough people putting their hand up to help. So that's probably the one downside that I can see.
That's a good point. That's a good point. What do you wish you'd known when you were competing that you perhaps know now or is clearer to you now?
That you can't control others. I used to spend so much time sort of worrying about other people, as I said, that if I lost it, the world wasn't going to come to an end, that, you know, the sun would still come up tomorrow. That was probably the biggest one for me. And that in my mind, it was just such a huge thing, the pressure that I would put on myself. And even now I talked about being a starter. I'll be down on pool deck. And as children finish the race, they'll look up to their parents to get that approval. And it breaks my heart when they look up to their parents and their parents sort of frown or don't clap. And I just think, I wish I'd known back then that it is okay to win, lose, just participate. Because I think I wish I could just tell that parent, put your cozzies on, jump in and swim as hard as you can for 800 metres
and then look up for some
Put yourself in their swimming togs.
I think you probably answered this question time and time again, but in particular over the last half an hour, how has your lived experience in sport impacted the way you sports parent Alani, Jaslyn and Avalon?
Very gently and very lovingly and very encouraging. I think that as a parent, you need to be exactly that. Feed them, make sure they're well rested, make sure they've got their goggles when they go off to race, and leave the rest to them. Let them be the captain of their own ship and just support them in their endeavors rather than trying to crack a whip and tell them what to do. I think that would just end in disaster. And I think, do you know what? I knew that I was coming to speak to you guys today and I went to go and jump in the car and I found this old kickboard and I went, oh, that is so cute. It was when my middle daughter had started swimming and so I'd written a little poem on her kickboard so that when she was swimming along, she'd know that she was feeling loved.
And
I've got it here in front of me.
What does it say? Yeah, that's very cool.
I love you, Jessie Boo. I told her that I wouldn't embarrass her and I think I've just done exactly that.
Well, maybe it's
more about you than about her, this one.
Yeah, exactly. Well, she swam many, many laps, so it's a little faded in the black marker pen that I'm reading, but it says, have fun and enjoy every lap. When it comes to great daughters, you deserve a big clap. I love you more than all the water in the pool. If children were gemstones, you'd be the finest jewel.
Oh, my
that's
God.
Lovely.
That's so nice.
And then it says, forget the glass slippers. My little princess wears flippers.
Oh, my gosh.
That's super cool, mate.
So that was ironic that I found that because that's very old.
That is lovely.
That's a great way to close it off, actually.
We do ask the final question, and I think you've done a great job in the
I was about
question,
to say,
but you
you've
may
given us
have
five or six already.
About, you may have thought about something, but if you did have one piece of advice for sports parents, what would it be?
As a parent, be a parent, and whether your child does a PB or comes last, hug them, love them, and just be their unwithering pillar of strength. Yeah, and it's only natural to want the best for your kids, but my advice is let them decide how often and how fast and what where their swimming journey is going to take them.
Any sport.
Or for any sport, whatever that may be.
That's gold. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Sports Parenthood. Please leave a review, share with your friends, or visit our website, sportsparenthood.com.au, to connect. Catch you next week.